4. When I got back home, my mother's car was parked in the driveway. This was a pleasant surprise, because she'd had to work a lot of overtime at the hospital this past year, and most nights she didn't get home until I'd already crashed. But knowing she was home also put me on edge, because she'd always been able to tell when something was bothering me. When I was younger, I was convinced she possessed some sort of mutant maternal telepathy that allowed her to read my mind, especially when there was crazy shit going on inside it. I found my mother stretched out on the living room sofa, with Muffet curled up at her feet, watching the latest episode of Doctor Who, one of her many televised addictions. Neither of them heard me come in, so I set my Armada controller box on the stairs and then just stood there for a moment, watching my mother watch her show. Pamela Lightman, née Crandall, was the coolest woman I'd ever met, as well as the toughest. She reminded me a lot of Sarah Connor or Ellen Ripley. Sure, she might have a few issues, but she was also the kind of single mom who would strap on heavy artillery and mow down killer cyborgs if that was what it took to protect her offspring. My mother was also ridiculously beautiful. I know people are supposed to say things like that about their mothers, but in my case, it happened to be a fact. Few young men know the Oedipal torment of growing up with an insanely hot, perpetually single mom, watching men constantly flip out over her looks before they've even bothered to get to know her, had made me faintly disgusted by my own gender, as if I didn't already have enough psychological baggage strapped to my luggage rack. Raising me all by herself had been difficult for my mother in lots of ways that probably weren't obvious to most people. For one thing, she'd done it without any assistance from her own parents. She'd lost her own father to cancer when she was still in grade school, and then her ultra-religious mother had disowned her for getting knocked up while she was still a senior in high school, and then marrying the no-good Nintendo nerd who defiled her. My mom had told me that her mother only tried to reconcile with her once, a few months after my father died. It didn't go well. She'd made the mistake of telling my mom his death was a blessing in disguise, because it meant now she could find herself a respectable husband, one with some prospects. After that, my mom had disowned her. I secretly worried that one of the toughest things for my mother was the simple necessity of being forced to look at my face every day. I looked just like my father, and so far the similarity had only seemed to increase as I got older. Now I was nearing the age he'd been at the time of his death, and I tried not to wonder how awful it must be for my mom to see her dead husband's doppelganger smiling at her from across the breakfast table every morning. Part of me even wondered if that might be why she'd become such a workaholic the past few years. My mom had never played the part of the lonely widow. She went out dancing with her friends all the time, and I knew she dated occasionally too, but she always seemed to end her relationships before they got serious. I'd never bothered to ask her why. The reason was obvious. She was still in love with my father, or at least with the memory of him. In my younger years, I'd drawn a kind of perverse satisfaction from knowing how much she missed him, because it was proof my parents really had been in love. But now that I'd grown up a little, I was beginning to worry she might stay single forever. I didn't like the idea of her living here all alone in this house after I graduated and moved out. "Hi, Mom," I said, speaking softly so as not to startle her.
"Oh, hey, honey," she said, muting the TV and sitting up slowly. "I didn't hear you come in."
She pointed at her right cheek, and I dutifully went over and planted a kiss there.
"Thank you,"
she said, ruffling my hair. Then she patted the couch beside her, and I sat down, pulling Muffet onto my lap.
"How was your day, kiddo?"
she asked. "Not too bad," I said, punctuating the lie with a casual shrug to help sell it. "How was your day, Ma?"
"Oh, it was pretty good,"
she replied, mimicking my voice and my casual shrug. "Glad to hear it," I said, even though I suspected she was fibbing, too. She spent her days taking care of cancer patients, many of them terminally ill. I wasn't sure how she ever managed to have a good day at that job. "You're not working late tonight?" I asked.
It's a Christmas miracle. She laughed at our old family joke. Everything was a Christmas miracle at our house, all year round. I decided to take a night off. She swung her feet off the couch and turned to face me. You hungry, babe? Because I'm craving cinnamon French toast. She stood up. How about it, kid? Feel like having some breakfast for dinner with your mom? Her question made my spider sense tingle. My mom only offered to make me breakfast for dinner when she wanted to have a serious talk with me. Thanks, but I had pizza at work, I said, inching backward. I'm kind of stuffed. She moved between me and the staircase, blocking my escape. You shall not pass, she declared, stomping her foot down theatrically on the carpet. Your vice principal called me a little while ago, she said. He told me you ditched math class early today, right after you tried to pick a fight with Douglas Notcher. I looked at her face and fought down a wave of anger, instead forcing myself to see how worried and upset she was and how much she was trying to hide it. I wasn't trying to pick a fight, Mom, I said. He was tormenting this other kid who sits near me. He's been bullying him for weeks. And I ran out of there because it was the only way to stop myself from tearing Notcher's head off. You should be proud of me. She studied my face for a moment. Then she sighed and kissed me on the cheek. Okay, kiddo, she said, hugging me. I know it isn't easy being stuck in that zoo. Just tough it out for a few more months and then you'll be free. Captain of your own destiny. I know, Ma, I said. 2 months. I'll make it. No worries. Remember, she added, biting her lip. You're not a minor anymore. I know, I said. Don't worry. Nothing like that will ever happen again, okay? She nodded. I could see that she was thinking about the incident. The incident that I'd just promised her, for the 1,000th time, would never happen again. Here's what would never happen again. One morning, a few weeks after I started 7th grade, I was walking past Notcher and a few of his friends in the hallway, when he smiled at me and said, Hey, Lightman, is it true your old man was dumb enough to die in a shit factory explosion? I'm not paraphrasing. That's a direct quote. There were eyewitnesses. The next thing I remember, I was sitting on Notcher's chest, staring down at his motionless, blood-drenched face amid a cacophony of screams from our classmates. Then I felt a tangle of strong arms around my neck and torso pulling me up and off of him, and found myself wondering why my knuckles were in agony and why Notcher was now curled in a bleeding heap on the waxed marble floor in front of me. Afterward, they said I attacked him like a wild animal and beat him unconscious. They said I kept right on beating him, even after he went limp. Apparently, it took 2 other boys and a teacher to finally pull me off of him. Notcher spent a week in the hospital recovering from a mild concussion and a fractured jaw. I got off pretty light, considering a 2-week suspension and mandatory anger management therapy the remainder of the school year, along with the nickname Zack Attack, and a permanent reputation as the class psycho. Far worse than any of that was the terrible 10-second gap the incident had left in my memory, and the question it had forced me to ask myself nearly every day since. What would I have done if there had been no one there to stop me? Notcher had probably seen a scan of my father's old newspaper obituary online. It was one of the only results that came up when you searched for his name. That was the way I'd learned how he died. My mother and grandparents had kept the details of his death from me while I was growing up, and I'm thankful they did, because that obituary had haunted me since the moment I'd first read it. I still had every word memorized. Beaverton man dies in wastewater treatment plant accident. Beaverton Valley Times, October 6, 2000. A Beaverton man was killed at approximately 9 a.m. Friday in an accident at the city's wastewater treatment plant on South River Road. Dead is Xavier Ulysses Lightman, 19, of 603 Bluebonnet Avenue, an employee of the city of Beaverton. The Washington County coroner pronounced Lightman dead at the scene. Lightman was working near a storage tank when an undetected methane leak rendered him unconscious. Investigators surmised a spark from an exposed electrical circuit ignited the gas, and Lightman was killed instantly in the subsequent explosion. A lifetime resident of Beaverton, Lightman is survived by his wife, Pamela, and son, Zachary. Funeral arrangements. Zach, are you even listening to me right now? Of course I am, Mom, I lied. What were you saying? I said that your guidance counselor, Mr. Russell, left me a voicemail too. She folded her arms. He said you missed your last two career counseling sessions. Sorry, I must have forgotten, I said. I'll go to the next one, okay? I promise. I tried to slip past her again, but she blocked my path and then stomped her foot down in front of me again, pretending like she was Gandalf and I was the Balrog. Did you finally make a decision? She asked, eyeing me. You mean, did I decide what I want to do with the rest of my life? She nodded. I took a deep breath and said the first thing that came to mind. Well, I have thought about this quite a bit, and after careful consideration, I've decided that I don't want to buy anything, sell anything, or process anything. She frowned and began to shake her head in protest, but I kept going. You know, as a career, I don't want to do that, I went on. I don't want to buy anything sold or processed. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed. Or process anything sold, bought, or processed, she finished, cutting me off. Who do you think you're messing with? Lloyd, all null and void. Busted, I said, raising my hands in a gesture of guilt. That's what you get for making me watch that flick 7 gajillion times. She folded her arms. Zach. There's more than enough money set aside in your college fund to cover 4 years of tuition at most schools. You can go anywhere you want and study anything you want. Do you know how lucky you are? Yep, I was lucky, all right. My mom had started that college fund for me when I was still just a baby, using some of the settlement money from my father's death that was left over after she bought our house. There had been enough to cover her tuition for nursing school, too. Lucky, right? Want to hear another stroke of great luck? My father's corpse was so badly burned in the explosion that the coroner had to use his dental records to identify the body, saving my mom from having to go to the morgue and identify his corpse herself. How much good fortune can one family stand? Did you think over what we discussed last time? She asked. You promised to consider going to college to study how to make video games, like Mike Cruz is planning to do. I'm good at playing video games, Mom, I said, not at making them. You need to be really good at programming or digital art, and I suck at both. I sighed and looked at my feet. The important thing is that you love gaming, she said. You'd figure out the rest. You'd enjoy it. She smiled and touched my face. You know I'm right. You've got gamer geek DNA on both sides. It was true. You'd never know it to look at her, but my mom was a hardcore gamer in her day, too. She'd had a serious World of Warcraft habit for a few years. She was more of a casual gamer now, but she played Terra Firma missions with me sometimes. Aren't there people who get paid to play the video games to test them out? Yeah, they're called quality assurance testers, I said. The job sounds good in theory, but in reality it sucks. The pay is crap, and all you do is play the same level of the same game over and over thousands of times to try and find bugs in the code. That would drive me nuts. She sighed and nodded. Yeah, me too. She lowered her voice to a conspiratorial whisper then smiled. "You know, Zach," she said, "you can enroll in college even if you're still not sure what you want to study. You just take a bunch of different courses and see what interests you. You'll figure out what you want to do eventually." I smiled and nodded in agreement, but she still didn't budge. "I'm not trying to pressure you, honey," she said. "I just want you to have a plan." "My plan for right now," I slowly told my mother, "is to keep on working at Starbase Ace. Maybe switch from part-time to full-time. That's an after-school job, Zach, not a long-term career plan. Think about what it would be like 5 years from now. Everyone else will be finishing college and starting a career, and you, I'll still be sitting on my ass all day, 5 blocks from where I graduated, working the same crappy retail job I had when I was 16, I finished for her." "Exactly." I tried to look hurt. "I find your lack of faith disturbing. You're going to find my foot jam disturbingly far up your ass if you don't stop screwing around and start making a serious plan for your future, mister." "When you start calling me mister, I know you're being super serious," I said. "I'm not saying that you have to go to college, honey. Join a monastery, join the Peace Corps, join the fucking X-Men. I don't care what you do, as long as you do something, okay?" I pretended to sigh heavily in relief. "In that case, maybe I'll run off and join the circus," I said. "I could start out as a weight guesser, then maybe work my way up to operating the tilt-a-whirl. I think you might have a few too many teeth for that line of work, smartass," she said, giving me a playful shove. "I'm not trying to give you a hard time, Ace. I just want the best for you. You're so smart and talented, honey. You can do great things." She looked me in the eyes. "You know that, right?" "Yeah, I know, Ma," I said. "Try not to worry, okay?" She frowned and continued to block my path, arms folded to indicate that getting past her wasn't going to be that easy. But then, like a gift from the gods, my phone chimed to inform me I had a new text message. I fumbled it out of my pocket and studied its display. "Urgent reminder, Earth Defense Alliance Command, Lieutenant Lightman, you are ordered to log in for your mission briefing at 8 p.m. PST. I also saw that Cruz and Deal had each sent me multiple text messages asking what the hell had happened in class and if I was still down for our Armada mission. "Sorry, Ma, I gotta run," I said, holding up my phone like it was some sort of hall pass. "I'm late for my Armada mission. It starts in just a few minutes." "Yeah, yeah," she said, rolling her eyes. "I know, late for a video game." She stepped out of my way. "Go on. Go get him, Maverick." "Thanks." I gave her a quick kiss on the cheek, which briefly inverted her frown. Then I grabbed the Armada controller box as I ran up the stairs and then down the hall, eager to reach the safety of my bedroom and the portal to another reality that lay beyond it. But my mother's voice traveled faster than I did, and her final, shouted warning reached my ears before I could clear the neutral zone. It was something I'd heard her say countless times growing up, and usually it made me want to roll my eyes at her. But this time, her words filled me with a genuine sense of dread. "I know the future is scary at times, sweetheart, but there's just no escaping it."